Venture Capital and Private Equity Association, SAVCA's second ever industry awards in collaboration with Investec and supported by Sunlum Investments. It's proud media partner of the awards, and it's where the industry gets to nominate portfolio companies that are really making great contributions to growth, to impact, to jobs, and to returns. The categories are segmented into four. There's startup or seed stage, we've got small, mid, and large. And tonight we welcome some of the shortlisted finalists in the startup or the pup phase. But these pups certainly have some serious bite to add to their bark. When you hear their stories, you'll see why. Justin Kutsia, who's the founder of Go Metro. Go Metro uses innovative technology to help change the way we move and make use of public transport. The second finalist has been earmarked as a potential African unicorn. Tim Willis, Chief Operations Officer of Aerobotics, is on the line, and Aerobotics is all about drone technology to help improve farmers' yields by analysing crops to detect things like pests and disease very early on. And in studio, Mitch and Adams, who's the co-founder of a company formerly known as iPay. It's now Ozo, there we go. Mitchin, thank you very much. Ozo is all about enabling e-commerce by supporting merchants to accept EFT payments from customers. So a really broad spectrum. And I'm just glad that I'm not a judge on that panel. I know Kitso Gordon and his fellow panelists are going to have their hands full deciding this one. Justin, kick us off here. Improving the way in which South Africans move through a better public transport experience is a grand ambition in a country with trains that never run on time and taxis that are bent on breaking the law. How do you plan on achieving this?
Yeah, thanks for having us on the show. We're using big data and data analytics to identify opportunities, low-hanging fruit, in public transport networks and ways that we can rethink the way we move. So we may have bad public transport, but we have enough transport. It's just really badly spread out, badly coordinated, badly scheduled, and badly funded. And so we provide data analytics and enough information for decision makers to make smarter decisions. We've been able to map entire cities like never before, including a recent assignment where we measured the entire city of Kigali in Rwanda, their bus network, and was able to find about 30% optimization in that one network, that if the city takes the advice, they're able to spend their budgets further. So we're using big data and data analytics and new ways of measuring things to improve the way that we move.
And that has profound impacts. If you think about that, you double-click on what that means for moving us from our cars and our contributions to CO2 emissions into public transport networks. There's a big social and environmental impact in all of this. Where do you see the low-hanging fruit in South Africa?
So we've got very good institutions in our city government, our provincial government, and our legislation. We've got great policy. We have more than enough funding available. And where we really need the change to happen is at a local government level. Capacity in local government for decision-making and fast decision-making will make a huge impact on the movement networks that we have. We have incredible skills, incredible resources in our city planning networks. Some of the best engineers in the world are South African. And it's really just the political will, the same will that we had for the World Cup, is the kind of will we need to turn public transport around. But it is within grasp, but it definitely is within measure. We advise as a startup, you know, we've gone beyond South African borders and advised cities around the world. So we've done a few projects in the States, Latin America, and in the UK. And the problems are the same everywhere. You know, there's just not enough data, not enough skill, not enough capacity, and certainly not enough political will. So we firmly believe that we have a strong future in urban mobility, and we're faced and forced as we urbanize more and more to consider the efficient use of space, time, and energy. And the answer always is better public transport.
Spoken like a true civil engineer, which is what you've qualified as, but it certainly presents a real challenge and the sort of challenge that gets engineers out of bed every morning. Now, aerobotics, and I think apart from the land debate in the country and its impact on agriculture, one of the most exciting and unfortunately least talked about aspects of the agriculture industry in the mainstream media, that is the amount of incredible innovation taking place. And I'm very pleased to see that it is starting to hit the mainstream. I was chatting to Zahnmeier of Nedbank a couple of months ago about drone technology, in particular this ability that we have in the macadamia nut industry. And he obviously mentioned Nedbank's one of the early investors in aerobotics. Now, Tim, the aerobotics story might be unfamiliar to some of the listeners. I've had you on the show in the past. Just remind us the journey that you've had so far over the last 5 years. You were founded in 2014 by James Patterson and Benji Meltzer, and you were part of the fifth cohort of Google's San Francisco-based Launchpad Accelerator. How far have you come in the last 5 years?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. We've made quite a lot of progress in the last 5 years, from humble beginnings in Cape Town. We now service clients in 18 countries around the world with our technology. Effectively what we do is we use artificial intelligence in tree crop orchards. We're able to identify every single tree, and we're able to really give farmers a lot of insight into what's happening with every single tree. Trees are, you know, very important assets to the farmer. Because if you lose a tree, it can take, you know, 4 or 5 years for that tree to regrow. And we're also moving into areas at the moment such as yield. So actually looking at individual fruit on the tree and helping farmers better predict, you know, their yields going forward. This is often quite a complex one for farmers, where they, you know, don't have this level of information, and it's difficult to make predictions. And so we're really helping them make better predictions using our technology. We've managed to really push into the United States. So our commercial office is actually now based in the US. We've made some really good progress there, and that's the biggest commercial farming market in the world. So a really important market for us.
In 5 years, it's amazing what one can achieve in this new world where the old barriers come down so easy, thanks to things like technology. And when you look at the outcome for farmers here, obviously predictive data is very helpful in terms of improving yields. We know that macadamia nuts are fast becoming South Africa's leading crop. I think they yield about just under 400,000 rand per hectare. What does this sort of technology do to the current yields, and what sort of improvements do you offer?
So our base product, which is an orchard mapping product, where we identify every single tree and provide health information, helps farmers better use their time on the farm. So instead of, you know, randomly scouting through areas, you can now go to very precise points and trees that are under stress. And then we also help farmers identify where there's lost production gaps. So for instance, a missing tree or a tree that needs to be replaced. Obviously any tree that is in a spot that's not going to produce or yield sufficiently is lost revenue. So that's the first part of how we're helping the farmers, and specifically macadamia farmers. We work with about 40% of the industry in South Africa already, and as you mentioned, South Africa is the biggest exporter of macadamias in the world. Now that we're moving into yield, initially we started with fruits, but it's very much on our roadmap to also work with nut farmers. We're helping them to make better decisions. Farmers often have to make decisions about sales, before their crops actually yield. And we're helping them to make better decisions and enter contracts which are more favorable to the farmers. And so that really helps them be more profitable over time.
And I want to come back to some of the challenges you've encountered with scaling that rapidly. Surely talent highs and skills, as I was just chatting to Professor Brian Armstrong about, can't be easy to come by. Mitchin, Ozo was founded as iPay also in 2014. Seems like it was a good vintage for startups in South Africa, by yourself and Thomas Pays, a very well-known entrepreneur, and Lyle Ixie. You facilitate bank-to-bank automated and instant electronic funds transfers, EFTs, in a matter of seconds. But what really makes you unique and differentiated in a market where we see similar offerings?
Well, look, so I've been in payments my whole professional career. So I knew payments. Thomas was a great marketer. That's his background. And I saw all the pain points of cards, how systems go down all the time. And I had been involved in an automated EFT project prior to this. And I saw the flaws in that as well. It was in a time where Internet Explorer was the main browser. So ActiveX extensions needed to be installed and all of that. And I guess over the few, I would say between 5 and 6 years, it changed where Apple came out, Apple Max came out, people started using Safari a bit more, then Chrome came out. And then phones, and then people start to drop in PCs and start using phones. And the payment industry doesn't keep up with this. They create a system, and that's it. So if you look at the progression of cards, it came from a check. So a check was something that you signed, and you gave it to somebody. I guess money is also just from gold and carrying wheelbarrows of gold. They said he has a piece of paper money, but now you didn't want to carry the paper money, so they give you another piece of paper to sign, and then they change that into a piece of plastic. So we have to get to the next level, which is digital. So no piece of plastic. And that's what makes us different from your current traditional payment mechanisms, that we are a lot more digital. You don't need anything physical on you. What differentiates us from competitors is the manner in which we do it. We understand scale. Scale is very important. If you look at South Africa in general, with e-commerce, that's our lowest hanging fruit. That's where we started out, is e-commerce. And there's only about 11 million people doing that at the moment out of our population that's close to 60 million. And you ask yourself, why don't these other guys, you know, come online when all these physical stores are being shut down? When it's dangerous to go into a store on Black Friday, rather shop online, what's stopping them? So firstly, you have to educate them, bring them onto this method of payment, and you must be able to handle all that scale. So credit card at the moment online does not handle that scale well, it seems. If you look at Black Friday, but look, they do much more than what we do.
Yeah, so, well, but Takealot certainly haven't got around that issue on Black Friday. The site's always hanging, not necessarily from a payment perspective, but there are challenges here. Mm. Just to fast forward a little bit to your venture capital investment by Kalon, and I want to ask this to all the panelists, but we'll start with you, Mitch. What value has a partnership with a venture capitalist brought to your business beyond the obvious of capital? Yes. What is the other value that a VC investor has brought to the business?
Well, in particular with Callan, the main person is Clive Butko, who used to be the ex-CEO of Accenture. So he's actually part of our board, and he brings a lot of insight in that. And every now and then, especially in payments, you're dealing with a lot of bureaucratic structures, banks. I mean, there's politics involved.
It's highly regulated.
Well. Yes. So every now and then you need somebody that has tact, has a lot of respect in the industry, and knows a lot of people, has a good network to kind of knock on the door, open it up, to start a conversation that usually would begin with no, because we come in with exotic requests. And if we just follow the normal path and normal questions that people ask, we'll get yeses. But we ask strange questions. Sounds like work, so they say no. And just to warm them up to this, he would come in and help out with that, yeah.
It's obvious that the knowledge and networks are a big addition to the funding. Justin, back to you. It seems Go Metro has also been born out of partnerships. What have you found is the most important part of the venture capital partnership that you've entered into?
Yeah, so we've got three venture capital funds that participated in our different seed stages, and recently we've included a fourth venture fund as we brought ourselves to level two BEE. So we've got Tritech Media, Clisoni Capital, Four Decades Capital, and Centaurus Capital. So we certainly have a whole bunch of capital around the table. And what's interesting about having this wealth of advice is exactly that it's called smart money for a reason. that around the table, we've seen just about every single business situation, every single scenario, every single good or bad thing that a business can go through, our investors have seen. So when we are faced with challenges or we are faced with decisions, we can really draw on the wealth of experience. And I benefit from knowing exactly what questions to ask, even if this is my first venture of my own. And so the way that our board makes decisions, collaborates, and comes up with solutions is really something that I value the most from our relationship with venture capital.
And Tim, for Aerobotics?
Yeah, I think it's for us, one of the biggest things is like just the belief in our idea and plan. I think as a small business, it's extremely hard to come into capital. And without capital, it's, you know, almost impossible to make anything work. So showing that early belief and taking that, you know, that risk together with the business is extremely important. And without, you know, without our venture capital, without our investors, you know, we wouldn't have been able to scale to the company we are today. And we continue to see like, or, you know, extremely great support from all of our investors, you know, as we sort of take on the global expansion, which is a expensive exercise.
and you need partners who understand that it's not a sort of faceless partnership. It's partners with experience, with people who are going to come and sit on the board and give you advice and be a sounding board when you need it, which has proved a very resilient model over the years. I want to ask you all, what's next, Mitchin? What's next for Ozo over the next few years? What are your grand ambitions?
Our grand ambitions is expansion. So we're venturing outside of e-commerce now. We're going to POS terminals. We've already answered the pain point in e-commerce, which was to do it fast, quick, and easy, and also to take the fraud aspect out. So we're going to bring this to POS terminals and then unlock it in Africa. Africa has a serious payment issue. Cash is still king, and most governments want to get rid of cash. We see what happened in India, and we see what's currently happening in South America. Africa is going to be the next playground for that to happen.
Which means a vast blue ocean of opportunity for Go Metro. If you look at the vast blue ocean of opportunity, Justin, you already said you're advising governments in Kigali all over the world. What's next for you?
Yeah, so we've got a number of projects in Latin America. We've just won a big piece of work in Buenos Aires to reform their bus network. And so we'll be looking at an expansion into a market very similar to ours, and we can take that South African experience there. But we also are in South Africa looking at the freight and logistics space. As the transport network deregulates and more private sector involvement goes into rail and freight particularly, we think that there's a really strong opportunity for us to add intelligence to our freight and logistics networks in South Africa.
And do you think you'll continue along with venture capital partners, or do you see a perhaps potential route through to the listed markets in your maybe medium to long-term future?
Yeah, so I think we've got a number of rounds of growth ahead of us, and along with our investors, we have a five-year game plan that we want to exercise, after which we will hopefully have a number of liquidity options for us and our investors.
Yeah, the old joke, how do you spot the private equiteer in the room? They're the first ones looking for the exits. You've got to know how you're going to be exiting these things. They are much like a marriage sometimes, although we don't talk about the divorce up front. Sometimes we should. Tim, what's next for Aerobotics?
Yeah, I think for us, we want to become the key like technology partner for tree crop growers, you know, around the world. And we're starting to, you know, make some inroads, you know, here in South Africa and in the US and in all the other countries where we work. But it's really about like bringing, you know, the full spectrum of products, to these tree crop farmers so that they can make, you know, decisions using technology at the right times in the season. And really, you know, understanding their business and bringing in the value that they need to see. So that's our kind of goal over the short to medium term, is to really make that a reality.
Well, I think the reality is that it's going to be a tough call at the second SAFCA Industry Awards on the 7th of November. Thanks to tonight's panelists and shortlisted finalists in the startup phase. Tim Willis, Chief Operations Officer of Aerobotics. Justin Kutsia, founder of Go Metro. And in studio, Mitch and Adams, co-founder of Ozo. That's a wrap from the team tonight. My thanks to sound engineers Tabs Khadebe and producer Andries Mahlangu. Kia Netze Makutu is in the Jazz Lounge in Cape Town and in Gauteng.